Hey everyone, it's Andrew Warner, the very brown Andrew Warner, and I say that because I always have to make sure that the camera picks up on my dark skin tone. And you're about to meet a founder who says that he puts his life ahead of his company. In fact, he told our team that he never works more than 35 hours a week, and still, his company continues to grow. And it continues to grow even when he works on new projects, like the one that he's got right now. His name is Drew Little. That's Drew as in Andrew. Drew Little. He is the founder of Red Giant. They develop special effects tools, and I'm going to ask him to tell you what that is. His new project is called New Health, like you always knew was a good idea. New Health, it's an online healthcare company. I invited him here to talk about how he did it. And he's a little bit skeptical that this even matters to talk about how a company is built. And this whole thing is sponsored by two companies that definitely do matter, largely because they pay for all these interviews to keep going, but also because they're great freaking tools. The first is ActiveCampaign, which will help you send out smarter email marketing. And the second is called TopTal. They will help you hire your next great developer. But I'll tell you more about those later. Drew, good to have you here.
Hey. Thanks for having me, Andrew.
Drew, my first question to you was going to be about your revenue. I was going to tee up this great question for you to talk about how mind-blowingly big this little company that you bootstrapped got. But I'm intrigued by what you said before we started. You said, I'm a little unsure about whether all this like startup-y businessman stuff even matters. Why do you feel that way? I've been thinking about that stuff too.
So I find business extremely fun and interesting, almost entertaining. It's kind of a challenge. It's a little bit of a puzzle. But at the end of the day, I just view human beings getting together to try to accomplish something. And I think we'll get into that a little bit deeper. But sometimes when we get into some sort of cliche business phrase and you know, synergy or whatever it is, I think it just makes me laugh a little because we think we're sitting down and we're working so hard at creating the next algorithm or the next, you know, widget or something. It's so important. And it's just not. It's kind of what we're doing together that I found more important. So you asked me, hey, how can we kind of help Red Giant during this podcast? And I was like, yeah, Red Giant is fine. You know what I mean? I just want to explore some other things. So that's why I kind of reacted that way.
I think I had a different expectation of what you meant by that. I've been listening to a lot of music from the 60s and 70s lately, and I'm wondering if they were all fools. Like, these were people who were supposed to change the world, right? You think about Crosby, Stills, sure. Nash. They were singing against the Vietnam War. You think about all these artists of the day who had this vision of how the world was going to be. And for a while there, it seemed like the earth and history was bending towards their more liberal point of view, towards their sensibilities. And then I now look back on their documentaries and I wonder, are these people, did they even matter? Like while they were protesting, Steve Forbes was in school in like a Young Republicans type organization getting stuff done. And Steve Jobs was creating software and all their little outfit changes and all their little CDs or records at the time that people fought so hard to get and they thought were so meaningful didn't really change the world today. If you look at the world today, it's not ruled by their sensibility. And I wonder, are we kind of kidding ourselves too? Are we setting ourselves up to admire certain people like Drew Houston, the founder of Dropbox, the founder of Foursquare? And in like 10 years, people are going to think that these companies didn't really even matter. They were just kind of making their money, enjoying their lives, and everyone else was becoming a super fan of them and should have just gotten a life instead of admiring them so much. What are your thoughts on that?
Oh man, it's so good. And so I've been challenging friends of mine recently, and most people don't even like the subject, but I like it. So I think that the net result of almost all technology to this day is negative or at best neutral. Okay. There's some technologies that help, and then there's some technologies that hurt us. Okay. Mm-hmm. So Facebook is a great, easy example. So Facebook comes out. And really, it helps you connect with people around the world. It helps you stay connected to others. I think that's important. I think that's a true relationship builder. But yet, it takes so much time away from friends and family. So on its own, Facebook is probably somewhere around neutral. I would say it's probably negative. So you take something like Dropbox. I think that technology is actually, Dropbox specifically, what is it doing? It's helping us manage files on a computer. So it's like we were giving technology. So Dropbox is a technology to help with this other technology. So in itself, it's not necessarily a benefit because it's just trying to fix something. So I just view everything in terms of priority, time, relationships, love, these things. And so if you ask me any of these questions, I'll always go back to that.
I imagine you're not someone who goes home and looks at his phone a lot. You spend a lot of time with the family. Is that true? Or you're smiling. No, so you do, you get addicted to it too, like us, but it's a negative for you. Is that what it is?
So I try to use the phone as a, like I try to use my computer as an object to serve me, to make money, or to stay connected with my friends. The phone itself, when I go home, it goes in, all of our electronics go into a closet where I've got it. I'd show you this picture. It's amazing how I have it set up in there. And the door is closed. And when people text me, they often text, hey, Drew's closet, when you pick this up in the morning. Seriously, it's hilarious. But so little things like that. My wife and I actually no longer take our phones into restaurants, just as an example.
Just leave it in the car.
Just leave it in the car. It's because you're sitting in that restaurant and every single time something comes up like, oh, I should Google that. Or, oh, what's
that song? But Drew, what do you do when she goes to the restroom?
What do I do?
Yeah, that's when I pull out my phone.
Oh, yeah. No, I talk to my kids.
What about when it's the two of you on date night, she goes to the restroom, you're sitting by yourself at the table. Basically, it's going to be, let's round it up to 5 minutes. 5 minutes of you just sitting there. What do you do?
5 minutes in the bathroom?
No, I'm going to round it up. Walking to the bathroom. Totally. Maybe my wife will have a conversation with the waitress on the way back. I don't know what it is, but let's say 3 minutes. What do you do for the 3 minutes?
Okay. So look, I'll sit there or I'll talk to someone next to me. I'm very social, but this is just a matter of discipline. You know what I mean? And so I think that guys like you and I know you've had financial success. I know people listening to this have had financial success. We're so goal-oriented and we're so disciplined in so many ways. Like you sit there and listen to Tim Ferriss's podcast and what does he say? Okay, when you get up in the morning, what's your routine? And every successful person has one, for example, right? It's just discipline. Why can we not be disciplined with our phones? Just create a rule. I'm just saying create some rules and create some boundaries. You know what I mean? Same in our relationships. Why can we not be disciplined there? It's kind of silly. I think it's silly.
I think you're right that it's a challenge. It feels silly to me, but it is a big challenge. I don't get anything. When my wife goes to the restroom, the 3 minutes that I spend there, I will pull out my phone. I don't get anything of value out of that. It's not like I'm getting work done in the 3 minutes. It's that I can't sit still sometimes, and I get that. What is your – I got to get to these questions, but I'm curious. You said you do have a routine. Everyone has a morning routine. What's your morning routine? It seems like you've got a good one.
Yeah, I mean, forever, I've gotten up. Mornings are my favorite. I get up at, say, 6:30 naturally. It's actually like 6:23, so strange. Mm-hmm. And I make coffee. Actually, for the last 3 or 4 months, I've been doing a stretching routine because I have pretty significant back stress. Mm-hmm. And I play competitive sports, so it's annoying. So I stretch, and then I've read the Wall Street Journal for 20 years.
I'm disappointed by it. I used to read it. It's kind of a waste now. They're trying to be the New York Times. They're not giving me deep insight into business. They're telling me what Donald Trump is up to today.
Well, listen, I know.
I want them to deeply analyze a company. Like, how about when that guy, Martin Scorsese, gets convicted?
Yeah.
They have one paragraph describing what he did. And in that paragraph, there's no explanation. It's just he committed some securities fraud. Dude, I'm here for the Wall Street Journal. Don't give me the backstory about how he's the bad boy of business. Spend three paragraphs describing what he did. Don't make me go to Wikipedia.
But, you know, the thing is, I listened to this guy on the podcast the other day, and he was talking about what he did in the morning. Super smart guy. I can't remember who it was. Really smart guy. And he read their local crappy paper. And he's like, it's a crappy paper and has nothing in it. So it has something to do with that routine. And the thing is, if you study like flow state comes right after maybe meditation, which is also just a sense of focus. So for me reading the paper, drinking my coffee, which I've actually learned to drink slower and enjoy. Someone told me this. I was like, just drink it slower and actually take a moment to enjoy it. It's so weird. But I enjoy it so much more. Mm-hmm. And then I read the paper and I have read it for so long that I know the sections. I actually have the way I read it, like exactly the way I read it. And so I think it actually creates focus. And then I get into the state of like stimulated flow. And man, that first 2 or 3 hours in the morning working or doing something important, jam.
What do you work on first? What'd you work on today? I guess today you're your parents' house. So maybe you weren't working. What do you work on first thing?
Yeah. So I definitely go to email first. You know, that's one of those tricky ones. I go to email first and go through and check things. I'm a big believer in the book Getting Things Done, David Allen.
Yeah.
It's if you're going to ask me what book I give away, it's that one.
No, yeah, Tim Ferriss always asks that.
Yeah, I know. So if I ever feel discombobulated or I'm not sure kind of where to go, I have such a strict to-do system that I'll just go review that. And it just brings my...
And you don't feel like you're being managed by your to-do system. Like sometimes you want to be creative. I can never stick with those to-do systems because...
Yeah, interesting.
I just can't have a system or a person tell me what to do. It's like being back in school. I want to do what I'm excited about.
Yeah. No, I think it can work within there. I think it's a fair point. But I think if you look at life, like how are you at peace and how do you feel satisfied? People always use the word happiness. I hate it. It has to be satisfied because happiness is an emotion and satisfied is something you can achieve. And so I can't feel satisfied unless I'm really getting things done also.
Mm-hmm.
So having the to-do list and the function of checking things off, and it is, I am so disciplined to putting things on there. I flow through my life and listen, I only really go back there when I feel I need it and when I feel like I'm a little lost. So I will give you my little speech, not now because it's kind of boring, but I'll give you my little to-do list speech if you want it. I've given it so many times.
How long? Well, let me ask you this question. Let's get to the numbers, and then I'm going to ask you about the speech, and then we'll talk about how you built this company.
Okay, great.
Revenue for Red Giant, since I said I was going to get to that.
Yeah, we'll do $20 million this year.
What'd you do 2016?
2016 was, what is that? Is this 17? So last year we did, about $1 million less, just under 19.
Wow. Okay. And, it's a bootstrap company. Did I get that right?
100% bootstrapped. We've actually acquired a bunch of companies along the way and, total bank debt.
And you don't give them equity in your business?
Never have given equity.
Okay. So you know what? There's a reason why I wanted to know that. I wanted to kind of set up for the audience.
Yeah.
This isn't just a guy with a theory who's trying to make it. You've built something really solid here. And you did it with no outside funding, which was challenging. And we'll talk about why. What is this speech about getting things done? And then there's your dad behind you.
Hey, Dad.
Hey. Tell me the speech about to-do lists. I feel like I could use it. And then I also want to ask you about the horrible thing that happened to you in the .com world before Red Giant.
Yeah.
But what's the to-do thing?
Okay, so I can summarize this really fast. First off, if you don't use some form of to-do list, you're an idiot, okay?
Okay.
Like, you really are. Because it's just, I think it's impossible to navigate through life. I have family, kids, you know what I mean? I'm not obsessive about it. But the key to a to-do list, and if you can read the book, it'll say the same thing, is you got to use one. So people often use a whiteboard and they use post-it notes and they use their phone and then they also remember it in their head and then they write it on a notebook somewhere. First off, use one thing. Everything on one thing. I recommend a phone because it's ubiquitous. The mm-hmm. to-do list also shows up in your computer. If you don't use one thing, the problem is your mind doesn't trust it. So if you use three things, you actually distrust it. And now when you're laying in bed, your to-do list is spinning in your head because you don't trust where it is.
Yeah.
Okay. Just use one. And I use it on the car because I can basically bring up Siri and I can put something on my to-do list while driving.
I do that too. I would just even say, okay, hey, Siri, in 1 hour, remind me to pick up whatever I need to do. It's actually doing it right now.
Yeah. And so there's a few other ways to do it. The thing about the to-do list, no priorities. You review it frequently. There's no 1, 2, 3. Because priorities change.
Mm-hmm.
And so I put everything on my, I put everything on a list called today and then everything on just a general list. So everything was on the general list and then I move things that I want to do onto today. And if they stay on there too long, I move them off.
I've done that too, I find that big long one is too hard for me to pay attention to. So I've got this one list
knock
on
it
my
off
phone.
The side.
It's called Rock Today. And it's like, what is going to make me feel like I've just really rocked today? And that's all that goes on there. And I try to get that done. All right. Let's go into how you started this business. Part of this, I refuse to work all day and all night thing goes back to what happened to you with the fail.com tool farm. What was tool farm?
Yeah, so I was living in San Francisco in the 90s. I moved out there, you know, high-paying sales job, tech sales job, and really everybody was starting dot-coms. It was just crazy, fun atmosphere. And so my buddies and I started a dot-com. We raised $50,000 and started a dot-com called Tool Farm. And we had a lot of fun. Just worked 80 hours a week and ran it for 3.5 years. And the thing ended up just crumbling disastrously, just like most dot-coms. We ended up with $800,000 in debt. I got sued personally twice. You know, knock on the door. Are you Andrew Little? Yes, you're served. So all of that happened, and I paid myself $50,000 a year. So I didn't pay myself anything. I ended up like I was like unhealthy, overweight, and you know, that whole thing. And then I had $800,000 in debt, which I took really seriously. I wanted to pay the investors back, which, by the way, all investors paid back now. The new guys running
it. Investors don't need to get paid back. They're not. They get equity. If the thing doesn't work out, they lose their equity.
Yeah, I just a principal thing.
I see. So even though you didn't have to, you said, I want to make sure that they're paid back. They were not professional investors then? They were friends?
They were accredited, but yeah, they were more, there was a few we didn't know, but it was people we knew.
Friends and family, I see. And so they took a bet on you wanted. I'm looking at early versions of this site. You sold After Effects, Ampi Studio, Cinema 4D XL. Yeah. What is this business?
Actually, if any of my customers are listening, they'd probably be laughing at you right now.
Why? Because I'm not pronouncing this right?
A few. I was kind of joking.
It's not Ampi Studio? Ampi.
I actually don't even remember what that is.
Okay.
but I'll tell you what it is because it is kind of fun. So I got into – I'm not like a natural entrepreneur. I didn't have the paper route. And so I just kind of happened into this. I'm just willing to jump off and go do something, which I did with the Tool Farm. And that was really a fun experience, but I was sitting there one night and all 18 employees were gone. No kidding. I was sitting there running the company by myself in the evenings and I kind of couldn't remember where everybody went. You know, like one person went and got another job, another person went and got another job, and there I am. But it's digital media products, so it's special effects tools. And so whether or not you want to take a video and you want to add a filter to it so it looks kind of like a cool effect, or whether you want to add a digital light like a sunset, or you want to put a light behind an ESPN logo like a digital light flashing, we do all those. We rule that world. That world is ours.
I see. And so you took on some investors. You went for it. It seems so similar to what you're doing now. Why didn't that work?
Well, lots of reasons. It starts with, I think, the way I was running a business. And because I was naive, I was running a business the way I thought a business should be run, just trying to follow all the rules. And I was working so hard and I had money and it was all about growth and all about eyeballs. And like, I wasn't paying attention to the finances. I mean, it's the same old story. But here's where it shifted. So literally 2 weeks after I got out of Tool Farm and got other people to run it, save it, I should say, because they're doing amazing. I started Red Giant Space, but it's a product company where Tool Farm was a distributor. So I wanted to own my own products.
Oh, I see. Tool Farm, you're taking other people's software that I, as a consumer, might be able to buy on other sites, and you were selling that. Here, you had exclusive software. You owned it completely. The margins were much bigger, and your customers didn't have a bunch of other places to go to, so the competition for it was lower.
Exactly. So I kick off Red Giant, and I was burned out at Tool Farm. Here's the crazy thing. I could barely like get up and go to work. 2 weeks later, I start Red Giant. I am jumping out of bed. Like, can't wait to work again.
Because?
Because I was excited about what I was doing. Like, I was doing my own thing, and I was building it, and it was starting to work. Like, right away,
clean slate. There was no more of – what about the debt from the other company? Wasn't that still weighing on you?
Corporate debt.
It was all corporate debt at that point.
Yeah. It was weighing on me, but I knew I found good people to run it, and I knew it had a chance.
Okay.
So they literally 2 years ago paid off.
So worst case, the company goes out of business. You're not dead. You're not losing your house or your livelihood.
Yep. Got it. The personal lawsuits, we settled.
I see.
We settled and say – you settle by doing something called – you just say no contest, which is what they want.
Okay.
You just say no contest, which means they sued, and yes, you owe them the money.
Okay.
Creditors all, once it starts going bad, creditors want to get first in line. It's almost a date on the lawsuit. Who's got the earliest date? once money starts being paid out.
Got it. I get that. I was actually it's one of the early dates, and that was important to me when someone went bankrupt. Let me talk about my sponsor, and then I want to come back and say and ask you where the idea came from for Red Giant and what's the first step you took. But first, the sponsor is a company called Active Campaign. I'm about to take a risk here because I want to ask you. You said you tried Active Campaign and it didn't work for you. And usually I wouldn't like bring this up without knowing why, because who knows where you're going with this. But tell me about your experience with Active Campaign since you were considering it. I want to give people a good view of it.
Sure. And I'm actually probably not the right person to ask. And when I said that, so everybody says use Active Campaign. And I was building email lists on my new one of my new software companies. Yep. And so I just jumped in and frankly, I didn't spend enough time on it. I can tell it's a great – I can tell it's laid out awesome.
What drew you to it? Do you remember?
Just the recommendations. All of my tech buddies saying just use Active Campaign.
Yeah. So the thing that they're
everybody
now,
really talks about,
I thought you were going to say used it years ago and then you outgrew it. Years ago, what they used to do was just allow you to build a mailing list and then send out email to that list. What they realized was that the smart marketers weren't just building a list and sending the same thing to everyone. They were starting to customize their messages based on what people had done or said or clicked on. And so Active Campaign said, let's rebuild Active Campaign and make it into a smart email automation, which means that if you buy, the person who's using Active Campaign can send you different messages and not send you a message like, hey, get 10% off the purchase price, right? Because that's kind of awkward and you don't want to send that to someone who just bought. If someone's clicking on one part of your product's feature set on your website, you want to know it. You want to tag them so you can send them follow-up messages emphasizing why buying to get that feature is so impressive and so important. That's what Active Campaign does. They actually try to make it so simple that anyone in your organization can use it. But I could understand, you know what? We're all entrepreneurs. We're very busy. We don't want to get too wrapped up in any one piece of software. We want to focus on the thing we're selling and not get distracted. And so if you're listening to me and you like this marketing automation and you're kind of curious about it the way that Drew was, and you say, you know what? I might be like Drew. I might not have the time, the patience, the attention span, the capacity right now to go through and understand it on my own. They're actually offering Mixergy listeners something that will help with that problem. And that is two free one-on-ones with their professionals to help you strategize and understand how you can use Active Campaign in your business. So the reason I emphasize two is I understand you get one consultation, you have to go off and figure it on your own. And then when you get stuck, you feel like you're stuck and you got to deal with it yourself. The second consultation will allow you to clear up whatever you were supposed to get done with the first one. They will make it really easy for you to use all the tools that you need to in Active Campaign, right? Imagine sending one email and then maybe the middle of the email is different based on what people have clicked on, or two different emails based on who's opening it up. So they're going to give you those two free consultations. They're going to do a second month free, and they're also going to migrate you for free from whatever other software you're using when you're ready to upgrade to Active Campaign. As Drew said, a lot of entrepreneurs are recommending it. You owe it to yourself to just go and check it out. So there's one other thing that you're going to get on this page that I'm giving you, and that is a free trial. So my suggestion to you is just go sign up. Grab a drink. Maybe it's coffee that you sip slowly. Maybe it's a whiskey. Maybe it's wine. Maybe it's just water. I have a lot of Mormon listeners. Whatever it is, I don't care. Just spend like an hour just looking through it, getting a sense of what your business can do with smart marketing automation. It's really easy and accessible, and I want to make it as easy as possible. So I'm going to give you this special URL where all that I mentioned and more is going to be available to you. Go to activecampaign.com/Mixergy, activecampaign.com/Mixergy. And when you scroll down about 75% of the page, you're going to see a flow chart that will explain to you in like one visual how you should be running your email marketing. Just that one thing on the right side of the screen. Go to activecampaign.com/Mixergy to see it. Drew, thanks for not ragging on my sponsor, though. I think I wonder how I would have handled it if you had.
What's that?
I wonder how, if you would have said, Andrew, they're the worst, here's what happened. I wonder how I would have handled it. What I'm pushing myself to do is just like, just roll with it. What's the worst thing that can happen? I lose them as a sponsor.
Yeah, no,
if they're not good, I should lose them.
Well, listen, I think people are hesitant to be authentic, and it's one of the things I think about all the time. So when my wife and I think about relationships, we think about genuine and authentic, and it is kind of hard to find. So the only way to really be genuine and authentic is to take risk and to have disclosure. Like, disclose, just talk, you know what I mean? It's all okay. And by the way, if somebody says that Active Campaign sucks to you, you should consider not having them be a sponsor. Fine. You know what I mean? So in sales, I learned like always after you make a sale, you call that person, you ask, why did you buy? Why did you buy? And and have the courage to do that, because if you do that, then you just use that story on the next person. Why'd you buy?
Oh, hang on a second. Hey, Siri. Oh, hang on, I gotta do that. At 4:30 today, remind me that we need to have one question every customer who comes into our site is asked, and that is, why did you buy, period. We're creating this new flow for onboarding customers. We need to incorporate this in there right now. You're absolutely right. People have told me to do this in the past, and I just forgot to incorporate it. If it's not in my system, it doesn't get done.
Good. Because people oftentimes don't ask the question because they're worried about a negative response. Well, you should be happy about getting a negative response.
I'm worried about bothering them. I feel like you just bought. You don't want to do my survey now. You want to use what you bought. And yeah, I shouldn't be worried about that. It's part of the flow. They want to tell you. They want to think about it. Yeah. And frankly, what I should be doing is saying, I don't want to bother them, so let's make it something useful for them. And I wouldn't ask, why did you buy? Imagine you buy for me. The question should be really clear on what you want out of this and why you signed up for this, so that you could remember and get and stay focused on your mission here. Something like that. So I'm telling them why it's important for them to be clear on why they bought. So they're helping me, but they're also helping themselves. All right. I could talk to you freaking hours. I need a coach like you.
I feel like
you're very level-headed and also very organized.
Yeah, it always makes me laugh. I am organized in a sense, but really I'm like a disaster in mostly, but in work and life and priorities, in eating, and I just have this way to be disciplined and organized. It's
very strange. Where are you a disaster?
Time. Like, my wife jokes all the time, if a day comes up, I'm like, okay, I'm going to do these 10 things today. Because I like to, you know, do lots of things. And so I flow and I'm late. You know, I'm not a punctual person.
Yes, I get it.
It's on my list to be better at, because evidently it's disrespectful.
Yeah, people don't like it. Where did the idea for Red Giant come from?
There was a product that I sold inside of Tool Farm, and those guys approached me and said, hey, you want to spin this out and we'll give you a license to this product. At the time, I met my Red Giant business partner, and he was able to get a worldwide license on a second product. And so we just kind of connected and we said, hey, let's just form this company together. It fit me because I knew the industry and I also wanted to be a product company. So we had worldwide exclusives on two products. And, but here's the key to everything. And here's where it changed. I said, I'm going to start this company. But as I'm like mentally thinking about starting another company, cause I'm like, it's the last thing I should be doing, cause I'm an absolute failure and I'm burnt out. I shouldn't be starting another company. I just said, okay, if I do it, I'm just going to do it in my own way. And the company is going to work for me. I'm not going to work for the company. It just never again. So now that was 15 years ago. And it just, I've never again. The company has never driven me again, and I just did it my own way. So as I had success, I just paid attention to how I did it, and then I just kept replicating it, and it just kept working.
What do you mean by – see, I don't want the company to run my life either. I want it to be organized enough that I could take time off. You basically – at this point, you told me before the interview started, look, Andrew, Red Giant's kind of working without me. I don't really need to talk about it. They don't need me promoting it. How do you get to that level from the beginning? Let's start that basic.
Oh, yeah.
What did you do to set yourself up for this kind of life?
So first and foremost, you have to have active campaign.
I almost spit out my hot water.
Okay. The reason I thought of that is, so I set up the company from the beginning to be very autonomous and very technology driven. And so accounting system all online. And by the way, this is back in 2002. So people are like, duh. But back then, online accounting systems and other things were really rare. So the entire company is all online. Everything is automated. Like, I'm crazy about automation.
Give me an example of something that's basic that most people wouldn't automate, but you do.
Okay. Can you ask that question?
What do you automate that most people would not automate?
Okay. I'm going to give you an example in this way. So tech support, for instance, if you have lots of tech support, you have to have more employees and the customers aren't happy. And so we always put a serial number system in there that on the back actually always worked. Like, it wasn't even a real system. Like, we basically let people, they could rip off our software all day. We made the system so easy that it was barely serialized.
You mean if I downloaded your software and you gave me my my serial number, even if I typed it wrong, it was going to work. Even if I didn't really, is that it?
That's it. And even in the like, if you bought an upgrade that was $99 and the product is $500, the upgrade was always the full product, because we never wanted to create a problem. And so when I say automation, I'm making like practical decisions throughout the business that are good for the customers. So what happens in software is you get in this piracy philosophy, and if you try to stop pirates, it works a little bit, but then you punish honorable, good customers. And so I never got into that. And then I automate all serial number delivery, and we created a 30-day money-back guarantee for software.
This is not SaaS. We're talking about downloadable software. They could come to you and say, "I don't like it. I want my money back." There is no way for you to pull that software off their computer.
Correct.
And so when we think of automation, we think of email that goes out one day and then a follow up the next day and so on. When you think about automation, I imagine you think about that too. But you're also thinking about how do I reduce steps and headaches in the future by not even having those the checklist, by just saying, I'm giving you the full software.
Yes.
We're not adding another process for how to remove it or break it if you decide to get your money back. That's the kind of systems you're talking about.
So think of it this way. My goal always is that a customer never calls us. Because as soon as a customer calls you or emails you, everybody loses. You failed. The software was either hard to use, right, or it broke. See what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Like, people have given me so much grief for saying it that way. Yeah, we don't want customers to call because it's good for them. So does that make sense? By the way, all the stuff you should do.
Away from this interview, largely because we had tech issues here, to tell you about my sponsor, TopTal. And specifically, there was a question on Quora about who had experience with TopTal and wants to share it. And the founder of Sidekick said, I did. Let me tell you guys what happened. And you can see it on Quora, but I'll sum it up for you like this. He said that he used TopTal to design the app that he had in mind. He wanted someone who could do UX, user experience development, really well. And so he went to TopTal, and they understood his issue. They understood what he was looking to create, and they matched him up with a design UX expert, someone who can actually help him think through how he wanted to present his app. Once that was done, he said that he went back to TopTal because he needed a finance expert to help him with his round of funding, somebody who could help him get his numbers in order, someone who could help him think through what investors are going to ask him when he's raising money. He said that alone gave him a tremendous return on investment. And then he said that he went to find a cheap developer. And as he did that, he realized, actually, this cheap developer is not going to end up being really cheap. He went back to TopTal. He found someone that got him a 10-time faster result at a quarter the cost. So TopTal is not cheap, but their people work so well that it ends up being cheaper in the long run. And as a result, he is so ecstatic about his relationship with TopTal that he basically answered this Quora question in detail. Many other people have had this experience. You've heard me tell their case studies here. If you're looking to hire a developer or a designer or a finance expert, you can see that TopTal is the place to go. That's top as in top of your head, tal as in talent. In fact, if you go to the special URL that I'm about to give you, you're going to get 80 hours of TopTal developer credit when you pay for your first 80 hours. And that's in addition to a no-risk trial period of up to 2 weeks. Top is on top of your head, tal is in talent. That's toptal.com/mixergy. toptal.com/mixergy. All right, let's get back into this great interview. Hey, man, a lot of technical issues here, but now that we're back, the question I wanted to ask you is, how did you get customers? You have your process in place. What do you do to get customers?
Well, the first customers, obviously, those are important. And so I ended up getting some databases from friends of mine in the industry. They work for companies that treat them poorly, and they're willing to send me the databases. I can't remember all the details. I just know that's how it happened. So I ended up with like 11,000 people. Okay. Mm-hmm. And I had this new software that I had just gotten for my new company, Red Giant. And I emailed it out. And that first month we did $23,000.
Wait, they gave you email addresses from the companies they worked for without like the company's permission?
Did I say that?
I think you did. I'm not going to push so that you don't back away. No, but
it's you know, and it was actually really kind of pre like these spam, like it's a big thing now. Like this was really early. And so I basically said, hey, I'm sending you this because you purchased this software. They were customers of this software as a new version.
Okay.
I was very like,
but for the specific company that owned those email addresses and that database, you didn't get their permission to use their email addresses.
That's possible.
Okay.
That's possible. And so we did send them out and we had a one-page website that had a huge red buy button that I built because I'm lame. I mean, that design.
I think I saw that site. It was you gave us a link to it. It's a Yahoo store.
Yeah, so we used Yahoo store. I mean, they could have had it all. It was basically, for people that don't know, Yahoo store was the original Shopify. And you could build a template site right on top. And it really wasn't made for software. I had to like totally kludge together a system to use it for software and downloads. But yeah, Yahoo store.
Yeah, this is the thing that Paul Graham built and sold to Yahoo. I forget what he called it, ViaWeb. And then Yahoo bought turned it into Yahoo stores. That's how Paul Graham started out in business, the guy who now runs or who founded Y Combinator.
Really?
Yeah.
No, I didn't know that. And I loved Yahoo store. And I was so sad that it didn't continue and that they didn't develop it along the way. I sent so many ideas to those guys.
They neglected it, and they had this huge marketplace. Not only that, they had something that Etsy for a long time was aspiring to build, which is one unified store where you access just about every Yahoo store. So if you have your products listed on a Yahoo store, it goes into their big store, kind of like an Amazon for small merchants. And anyway, it didn't fully work out for them. Why did you use Yahoo store? It sounds like that was an intentional decision. You didn't want to build your own site, even though you could.
Yeah, because I was dedicated to having a life going forward, like every decision I made was to just try to not hire people or try to not make it complicated. So I didn't want engineers. So I just built it myself.
The next thing you did was you started offering a trial version of the software as a way of getting people on your mailing list, right? This is the freemium thing before freemium was a thing. Where did you come up with the idea for this freemium option?
Well, the one thing I knew from the beginning, it's one of the few things I did that was really, I guess, smart, is I collected emails from anybody that downloaded a trial version of the software. And so I started this in 2002, and obviously it's 15 years later. And so now the mailing list is, I think it's like 1.3 million. And so that is just because we collected emails from day one. And the thing is, in that first year, we probably had hundreds, but...
You know what? I remember talking to the founder of Envision he's a longtime fan of Mixergy, and he says one of the things they do to grow their mailing list is, and to give back to the community, is they create these little tools that are going to be for free, but to get them, right? Did you do anything like that and register people or create free products just to grow the list?
You know, we actually did a couple of free tools. It just never worked for us. It's a kind of another thing, another story, but we charge for software. And that's what we got really good at. And so we just gave a trial version that anybody could use and, you know, make a project or something. And then hopefully they came back.
I see. And so, was the trial version from in the beginning, was it a fully functioning version of the software with an expiration?
So this is special effects. And so it's a little bit of a different world, but we never had a 30-day. In fact, to this day, we're thinking about doing a 30-day. We would let you render a project, render a file with a red X on it.
I see. Got it. So you can fully experience it, but there's the watermark. So can you describe what this software does? I've seen your YouTube videos that explain it. Sure. I understand it, but I don't know how to communicate it to the audience.
Yeah. The best way to talk about it is there's really two groups of software products. One is... effects.
Sorry, and so we just lost your connection yet again. So you were saying there are two groups of products. You just started saying what the first one was, and that's when I lost you.
Yeah, so two groups of products. Mm-hmm. The first one is digital effects. Mm-hmm. And so if you turn on ESPN and the logo comes spinning at you, and all around it, it's got these lights on it.
Yeah.
Lights off the corners. So we do digital lights. We like rule digital lights. Who knew, right? Like in the world, if you see digital lights. Originally, this was actually from... Tinkerbell in the original Hook movie. And then it was basically further developed by John Knoll at Industrial Light Magic and now at Disney. Okay. He developed it for the Photon Torpedo in the Starship Enterprise.
And so you created software like that, or is this the same software?
No, it's his.
It's his software that was used in those movies and others.
Yeah, so we basically teamed up with where we found these like visionaries out there, and we helped them productize these tools and basically bring them to the market at $200.
I see.
So they develop it for big feature films.
See what I'm saying? That explains why even in the early days your site said these are the same tools that are used in, and then you gave a list of movies like Vanilla Sky, you said on the one of the early versions
Vanilla
of
Sky,
your site.
Avatar, you know, I mean, almost all movies are now using some
MTV
version.
Jackass, the movie, used it. You're saying, So you kind of partnered with them and you said, we're going to productize your software, make it available. So
Correct. That's
one thing. You own Digital Lights, you say. What else?
So Digital Lights. So anytime you have little snowflakes moving around, if you watch a car commercial today and you see rain, by the way, that ain't rain. Those are digital interpretations of raindrops coming down. So our software is used to randomize that rain so it looks supernatural and it blows in the wind and it's got all the physics properties.
Okay,
so that's a category. The second category is you shoot in video and you want to make your video look a little more like film, or you do a filter on it. So Magic Bullet is the number one filtering tool. So we really influence the way people treat video and do color correction and other color filters. So when we started, it was a really kind of nerdy, high-end thing. Now you can use our tools, and you know, we have 300,000 customers, probably 500,000 or 600,000 people have used it because of the pirate sites and other things. So we influence the way you see TV and the way you see commercials.
And YouTube videos?
Oh, yeah. Ask your videographer. Ask your videographer if he uses Red Giant products or Magic Bullet.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
And that was...
For that skin tone. Make sure that skin tone is just right.
Make sure I'm brown, just the right kind of brown. All right, I get now where you're going. We asked you what your biggest challenge was, and with the first company, there was a challenge where, like, you guys brought in the wrong CEO. The CEO had this issue, like this. There were all these issues, right? Here, the problem was focus. I don't see how that was an issue for you. I'm looking through internet archives trying to find a lack of focus. You guys stayed pretty focused.
Yeah.
Why did you tell our producer that was a challenge?
So the first company, we lacked focus. Mm-hmm. So we were a distributor of tech products. We also got into seminars. And in the .com era, about every 6 to 8 months, there was a new sort of technology. There was a new technology that was popular. It was getting funded. I'm telling you, there was a month we switched the entire company focus to e-learning because suddenly those were the technology that was getting funded. I'm like, oh my God, what the heck are we thinking? And so Red Giant focus is not necessarily a problem. It was a little bit towards the end of my tenure before I got someone else to run it because I was getting a little bit bored and I was taking risks. But no, Red Giant, hyper focus. And by the way, if you only work 35 hours a week, which I already said I do, you don't have a lot of time to do stuff that's not important.
So you don't have a lot of time to do. What's an example of something that you could have gotten carried away with that you were tempted to get into, but because you were so focused and so disciplined, you did not?
Well, I think one of the best stories is early on at Red Giant, we were a software company. We knew we wanted to build our own products. So Adobe approached us, and they said they wanted to hire our engineering team at like $150 an hour, which is a lot of money back then because I wasn't making too much, mm-hmm. as contractors. And so we could have made hundreds of thousands of dollars contracting out our engineering team. We said no because we wanted to be a product company. So we said no to the money, and then we kept doing our products.
And the credibility goes along with that.
Yeah, and so we stayed in the product because you can't scale what you do in life. You cannot scale your business. You cannot own your time unless you have products. Products are the only thing that are repeatable and scalable and that don't suck up your time, whether you sell 10 of them or whether you sell 10,000 of them. You're smiling because you now know this.
You know what? I started out my career knowing that. Doing these interviews is like an example of how I forget that. I get it. And I've talked to people who've like done 50 interviews when they started, and then they evergreen those interviews, and that's it. They're not going back every week. I just love it. I want every week to get to know someone new like you. I hate that we're having these connection problems because that's like infringing on our conversation, but I do enjoy that. And at the same time, I understand your point about how this is not a scalable thing. You left your company about 3 years ago. There's a CEO now running it. You spend 1 to 2 hours a week, you've told our producer, 1 to 2 hours a month on it. I couldn't do that with interviews. And you're right. It needs to be products, and not just products, but I think software products especially.
Yeah. And again, I would only suggest to you that that's a problem if something in your life important is suffering. Otherwise, it's not a problem. And so I'm rabid about building scalable solutions and making things profitable and making them work without me is because I want to spend time with my family and I want to spend time with my kids and I want to be a dad. I want to spend time on health. And then I want to spend time on giving back to the world, working with nonprofits and some other things.
And so I want to hear about the other projects that you're working on. Let me close this out by asking you about what you do to run your company, or what you did to run your company so that you wouldn't have to be there. Is there like project management? Is there a standard operating procedures book somewhere? What's your way of doing it? I've noticed a lot of entrepreneurs who are like,
list a few more. Can you guess a few more?
You said project management. If I had to guess, here's what I would do. My guess is that you have a set of philosophies that everyone understands, and maybe you have some short quotes around it or stories around it. Set of philosophies.
Yeah.
Software that manages the way that you guys work. So when an order comes through, there's something that goes to something else to make sure that your customer's happy.
Yeah.
And for things like bookkeeping and the rest, you probably outsource it so that you don't have to take it on and it becomes someone else's headache. So it's philosophies that are memorable.
Yeah.
Software that manages things, and then you outsource the things that aren't important. Did I get it right?
Yeah. No, none of those.
None of them. So what is it? How do you organize a company then?
So I've been kind of creating this new concept that I call exponential relationships. Mm-hmm. I've blogged on it. I've kind of explored it in that way. Getting good people and then having kind of a common mission and letting them go do it. So there's the only, so this, we don't have an operating manual. We don't have we have project management like systems to communicate, but just getting good people and let them go do it. And we agree on what's important. Okay. We agree on profit for sure. Let's focus on profit. We agree on taking care of, all of your coworkers, right? We agree that life is first. We agree that you can go do side projects. That's fun. You know, we agree we're going to be the best in our industry. We agree that we're going to deliver the best artistry. We're in the best speed. But the people, that's all. And then the people go do it. Does that make sense? Because what you said, I think, is what typically is done. And you think you need that. But just like Jack Welch and others have said, you just get the right people on the bus.
And when you say you agree, how formal is this agreement? Is it a list of things that you've put out that say, we care about profits and we care about these other things? Or is it just articulated in the company and everyone knows it?
It's talked about. You know, there's I've thought about over the time writing the lists and stuff. But when we have company meetings and we get together, like we talk about this. This is we have 100% profit sharing program. We take a percentage of profits that I've told a lot of entrepreneurs how much we do, and it's people are like, that's crazy, and we distribute to 100% of employees, like really big checks. Like you'd actually be shocked.
Like how big?
Okay, I'll just tell you the lowest level, the lowest employee will probably get $7,000 or $8,000 a year.
Okay.
And the highest is like, you know, buy, you know, put down deposit on houses.
Really? And so as a company, do you guys do over $5 million in profits a year?
It's actually the only number I don't really talk about. But I will tell you is it's a lot higher than that.
Wow.
We do software. And so I have made 4 different acquisitions and I have paid all of them off. Right now I just made my biggest acquisition a year ago, $18 million. And so I haven't paid that one off yet, but the other ones are all paid off. So I own everything. So I was debt-free up to 12 months ago.
Debt-free and no shareholder nagging you to sell so he can cash out. It's just you and the team that you work with.
So what happens is we have this profit-sharing program, and if we hire someone else you'll have people ask, is that okay for profits? Does that increase profit? Does that decrease profit? And you might think I'm like insane about profit, but what else are you doing? Like, why would you not focus on profit?
But what about if someone comes in and says, hey, you know what, Drew, if we do an e-learning component, people need to learn how to use the software anyway, we'll increase our profits. Or if we cut back on what we offer people, we'll increase our profits. What's limiting their desire for profits?
Yeah, got you. Well, we also have this thing called the double bottom line. So all decisions are made with a double bottom line, one being profit, one being us, people. So if we make it, if we make a decision that increases the profit but makes us work too much or has a negative effect on us, we won't do it. Everything goes through the double bottom line filter. And so what you just suggested is we want to do what's best for our customers. I know it's cliche, but it's really, really true. We want to deliver the best products. We want to be the best. People have done love stories for us on YouTube about Red Giant. When we go to trade shows, people hug us because they appreciate all of the stuff we do. This is the kind of stuff we're trying to achieve. So what you just asked is, this is the filter.
Okay, so I understand then how you'd be able to bring in a CEO and trust that the company would continue to run the way that you set it up. I'm wondering then why you created New Visions LLC, which is the owner of newhealth.com. And new, by the way, is new as in I knew what you were going to say. And K-N-E-W. What are you trying to do here?
So 3 years ago, I left Red Giant, brought in an amazing friend and CEO to run it. And he gets almost full authority to do everything at this point. And so we have monthly meetings and talk about very high level things. This is why I only spend a couple hours a month. And again, it's the ultimate of what I did for the company is bring in a great human being that runs it like I used to. But he's also super smart and really motivated. So I just spent the last 2 years trying to figure out what I wanted to do next. I wanted it to be big. I read the book Bold by Peter Diamandis, who's amazing. He's just an inspiration to me in the way he thinks about being bold and the way you kind of 10X things and the way you exponentially grow things. And so after I read that, I said, I'm going to reshift all of my goals in life. So I 10X'd everything. And so I want to go and basically affect and help millions of people. So I decided on health. And I just think we have kind of a health travesty in the U.S.
What's a travesty?
People are suffering. So chronic disease, you know, every indicator out there is just going through the roof. You know, whether it's chronic disease like diabetes 2 or there's just a long list. People are unhealthy. People are getting sick. People are on prescription medication. So me and my team are going to try to take healthcare online and create a membership model where you can pay a low fee like $100 a month and have a trained health coach interact with you 1v1 and create a health plan for you and check in on you on a weekly basis to make sure you're going through with it and help encourage you.
So they might tell me, Andrew, you need to cut back on your French fries consumption and have maybe 2 nights of whiskey, not 3. And then they'll check in with me every week to make sure I'm actually doing that, like a coach.
Yeah, it is a coach. So they're actually health coaches. We actually use a system of medicine called functional medicine. You can Google it. It's incredible. It's been out there for decades. Mark Hyman's probably the number one kind of spokesperson in the United States for functional medicine. But it is a lot of lifestyle changes. And so what to do, how to do it, and having the discipline to do it is the hard part. So that's what we help with. By the way, we can go through and do blood tests, and we'll give you numerical data. Okay, this is bad, this is good. We're going to ask you to change your lifestyle for 2 weeks or 3 weeks. We're going to test you again numerically.
So I'll go to like a Quest labs here in my area. They'll take my blood. You guys will get the data. Got it.
Yeah, so the thing is, men especially, they respond to data-driven analysis. And so if you get numbers, I don't want to be sexist here, but it's mostly true. Men respond to numbers. I'll give you numbers. You commit to changing your lifestyle for 3 weeks, we'll influence your numbers and you'll feel better. And you'll be like, okay, it works.
I see. And I'm imagining that with the wearables revolution, you're going to have even more data to use and to come back to me and analyze with.
All the data comes in. It's coming in from all areas. In fact, I saw a blood test monitor the other day that you can wear that basically pricks your finger, but it stays in there. I mean, it's mostly for diabetics, but there's a reason you can't use it just to monitor blood levels.
Why are you the COO of this company? Why does the guy who doesn't want to work a lot take on the role of the person who has to work a lot and do other people's work or make sure other people are working too? Why the COO and not the CEO role?
Yeah, you had to ask me that question. Well, I needed a high level position. The founder, James Maskell, is amazing. He's a best-selling author. You can Google him also, James Maskell. He's going to be the CEO. It's his vision. I'm not interested in being the CEO. So I literally had to Google what a COO is. Mm-hmm. I did. And actually, the thing is, it actually really does fit me. You think it's more operational, but it's also very strategic. And I do want to grow and run. I want to grow and run the business in my way. Like, this is just a new challenge. Like, I'm ready. I've been doing very little for 3 years. So
because the COO does create the systems that runs the company, takes the founder or CEO's vision, and then creates a process that, like, the CEO is the person who creates the business that creates the product.
Yeah, it is, while influencing the product and the strategy. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But titles aside, I believe that my founding team is a team that is very collaborative. We are on board with the same mission. We're going to have fun together. We're going to go for it. I'm very honest about my lifestyle does come first, but I'm also going to work hard. And no one's going to – no one. That's silly. Not many people get as much done as I do in the 4 hours a week or day of work, you know? Mm-hmm. Just get into that flow state. Read the Wall Street Journal.
Start your day with that.
Oh, into it. Yeah. It's a new challenge, and I just need to do it. I think a lot of people talk about being satisfied. One of the keys to being satisfied is continuing to grow and continue to challenge yourself.
And I can see that you're doing that. I'd like to hear you speak more. First of all, I know that you're doing this interview and you usually don't do interviews. I'm glad that you're doing it. I'm glad that you're getting more open about your story. I'd like to hear you, as you tell your story, to get into not business advice, but talk about how you use what your philosophy is on running a business and okay. how you acted on that philosophy as a CEO, as a founder, now as a COO. I want to hear more of that because I think you've got an interesting angle on how to run a business.
Okay. The number one thing is to get people around you to care. So the way I think about it is if you're not standing next to someone, are they working at full tilt? Mm-hmm. Are they all in? Do you know what I mean?
Yes, I do.
And I found the best way to do that is to get someone mm-hmm. to care. Okay? The way you get someone, because people don't care about businesses. They don't care about a company. It's a myth. What they care about is they care about the people around them in that company, and they care about the company's mission. Mm-hmm. So how do you get people to care around is you have to sit down and communicate. You have to respect. You have to listen. All this stuff, it's so hard. Like, you just want to go and you want to bark orders and just do this and do this and do this. Go ask anybody. No one will work hard for that person.
Yeah.
Right? So I sit and I talk to people and I have a very simple conversation, which is, hey, tell me in the last 6 months what you really enjoyed doing. And they kind of like start and they're kind of uncomfortable. And then they tell me and I'm like, okay, I really find what it is. And I really attempt to shift them into more what they enjoy doing. Then you don't have to motivate. Sometimes it obviously doesn't fit into what you need as a company. But I found more often it does. Because if they say, hey, I like throwing frisbee in a park, I'm like, okay, no, professionally, what do you like doing? And so you shift people over there and you find that most spots fill. So getting people to care is like a number one thing. And so when you're not there, or you're there, people are caring. And I'm telling you, productivity just goes through the roof.
I get that. What's that book? I forget the name of the book that talked about that. First, find your strengths. And I know that that Facebook spent a lot of time hiring the author, Marcus Buckingham, and having him go in and work with their people on that. I get the power of that. I mean, I'd like to just see you talk more, not just here in this interview, but in general about it. And it looks like you've got a blog, and I just looked it up, and it looks like you write on a regular basis. What is it called? It's called JustStartGo.com. Am I right?
That is correct. Yeah.
Okay. You're smiling.
Yeah. No, it just makes me laugh because when I came up with it, it was just kind of a funny thing in my head. But no, I do. I write because someone taught me the best way to figure out what you're thinking is to write.
Yeah.
And actually, it turns out to be true. It just organizes your thoughts.
Yeah. And so I really enjoyed the founder's guide to hiring. Complaining is lazy. 10 things to do to get your company to run better. I had no idea that you were writing about this. I'll go take a look at this. Be careful. Your instincts are lying to you.
Sorry, go ahead. No, if I'm asked a question like 10 times, like how do you get your company to run without you? Right? Or how do you hire? Who do you hire first when you're a founder? So I get these questions and then I'll just eventually go write a blog so I can send everybody my blog post because it's more efficient. It's scaling even.
So the website for that is juststartgo.com. Of course, for Red Giant, you can check them out at store.yahoo.com/80/ That was the old URL.
I'm kidding.
That was the old URL. We did this interview a few years ago, I'd have to say. Today I can say go check out redgiant.com. And finally, new health, K-N-E-W, health. And I want to thank my two sponsors, toptal.com/mixergy and activecampaign.com/mixergy. Drew, thank you so much.
Andrew, hey, I really appreciate it. I appreciate the advice on how to help me kind of go through these interviews. Appreciate it.
You bet. And thank you all for being a part of it. Bye, everyone.
Okay.